All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 6 in this Ancient History program of History at Our House for the elementary class. Today we're going to continue to work on this question. How do we make a connection between modern life and ancient life? Between modern America and the ancient world that we are going to study in ancient history? And the answer has a number of parts to it. But the first part of the answer is by creating a kind of portland chart for history, a chart that has a kind of map for getting us back to the past and then from the past back to the present. So that is going to be what we're going to focus on today, kind of completing our portland chart. We won't quite get it finished, but we'll get pretty far down the road here. We're going to kind of accelerate a little bit in terms of the facts that we are learning. And so we'll kind of have a better outline of this chart that we are building here. So remember, of course, that we are studying history from where we are. And we start in history by identifying what kind of place this is, what time it, you know, when it is in history, where we are, and so on, what kind of world this is. And so our starting point is, well, there's kind of two reasons why we start in America. One obvious reason is that most of the students here are living in the United States or nearby. And the other reason is, though, that it much more broadly than that, that we live in a world where the United States is by far the most important country. And this is a unique arrangement in history. There's never been a time in history where one country is certainly the most important in the entire world. So that's where we start, is from this world that we call an America-centric world. And that's our first anchor of studying the past, is to connect from this America-centric world to the ancient past. We're going to start with the birth of the United States. As we travel back to the past from where we are, we're going to go down this path, and that's going to be our first milestone to get us all the way back to the ancient past. All right, now Opal has a question or comment about that. Opal, go ahead.
Is America-centric a real word, or did you make it up?
No, it certainly is a real word. And so, you know, maybe if you studied a little bit of science, you might have heard of the fact that people used to think the Earth was in the center of the universe. Did you know that people used to think that?
Yes.
What was that called?
I don't remember.
Okay, it was called the geocentric theory of the universe. And then a guy named Nicholas Copernicus came along, and others like Galileo and Newton and so on, and they figured out that in fact our solar system at least is heliocentric, meaning the sun is in the center, not the Earth. And of course we know that the universe is so unimaginably much vaster than that. So it's not that the universe is heliocentric, but at least our solar system is. So we use this expression, centric, as a suffix, which means something that we place at the end of a word, to denote something that has a center. And then, of course, the first part of the word is the name of the thing that's at the center. So, you know, you might have heard the phrase for some people, you know, kind of complain that history tends to be kind of Eurocentric. That's another phrase that shows that people are talking about Europe being kind of in the center in a way. So I'm using that same sort of phrase. You can use any type of, you know, take any word in a sense and put it at the beginning of that and make something, you know, something centric. Of course, we want to be sure to name something that's true here. So America-centrism, certainly not the first, I'm not the first person to identify that. That is a widely understood phenomenon because the United States is militarily by far the most powerful. It is economically the most important, and it is culturally the most important country in the world. There's never been a time where there's been one country that has all of those traits, and all of the other countries face the United States, and their relationship to the United States is the most important thing to them. So that is a kind of centrism, and we call that America-centrism. Okay? So, good question. All right, so now that we are in that world and we are looking back, we want to try to make our way into the ancient past, along this path, backwards into the past. And, of course, the question that comes from this birth of the United States is, well, how did there come to ever be a United States? Well, there were, if we know the story of America a little bit, even if we don't know it really well, like some of the students from last year do know it very well, we know that America was created by British colonists who rebelled against their mother country. And the Declaration of Independence was when they said, we are no longer going to be loyal to the king, we are going to have a new kind of government. And so how did there come to be any British people in America at all? How did there come to be? Well, there's a very basic answer to that question. A new world was discovered by Christopher Columbus in 1492. So there wouldn't be no Europeans in America had that not happened. So yes, later on, other explorers came and found different parts of it, and then people who are called colonists came and arrived at different parts of what we call the United States. Here's a good review question for American history students. What was the first successful American colony? Who remembers their anchor facts of American history? Patrick!
Plymouth
was in 1620, but it was the second.
Jamestown
in what year?
1607.
Fantastic. Okay. Jamestown 1607 and then Plymouth 1620. Right. Those were our anchor facts of American history as we were working through our story. All right. So that's when the English started to get here, right? But they would never have come unless they knew that there was a place to come to. No Europeans would be in America, and people in Brazil would not be speaking Portuguese today, and people in Mexico would not be speaking Spanish, and people in America would not be speaking English unless Europeans had come here. And so that all comes down to Christopher Columbus's discovery in 1492. So that's our second anchor fact. And as you can see, we're moving down, or not so much down, but backwards in history, you could say, closer and closer to the ancient world that we are going to be studying this year. And we're making a connection between us and the ancient world. Are we there yet? Well, not quite, because where was Christopher Columbus from? If Christopher Columbus was from some kind of ancient civilization, then we might already be connected, right? But he wasn't. Does anybody know where Christopher Columbus was from? Rosetta, go ahead.
He was from Italy.
Yes, he was from Italy, in particular the city-state of Genoa. Right, okay. And so he was Italian, we say, and he sailed on behalf of, well, what the heck? Let's see if anybody else remembers that one. Who did Christopher Columbus sail for? Opal?
Spain?
Yeah, Spain, in particular Isabella, who was the ruler of what country that became the biggest part of Spain? Anybody here remember? I'm asking my American history students to see if they can dig back in their memories again. It was Ferdinand of Aragon and Isabella of Castile. Okay, that's okay. That was one of those, you know, more detailed questions, but that's all right. So anyway, so yeah, Spain, if people say Christopher Columbus sailed for Spain, I think that's a completely reasonable answer. By that point, Aragon and Castile were kind of combining anyway, and they had defeated the Muslims who were in Spain, and they were really creating a single country, and Christopher Columbus sailed for them. So he's Italian sailing for Spain. These are European countries. These are not the kinds of countries that we talk about in the ancient world. If we were talking about the ancient world, and Christopher Columbus had come from Italy, well, what would he be called? What kind of person would he be? We might call him an Italian, but if he was from Italy, what kind of person would we be referring to him as being? Who were all of these people who had this big empire that was centered in Italy? What were they known as? We have it on our Portland chart, and we were departing from the center. All roads lead to Gabriel? Rome, yes, right. If if Christopher Columbus was from Italy, in ancient Italy, we would be speaking of him as a Roman. Yes, Rome is the city, and the people who lived in the city thought that they were better than anyone else. Just like, you know, people from New York today, or places like that, right? They're kind of the leaders and the go-getters and kind of, you know, on top, and they kind of think of themselves as at the center of the world. And in a way, Rome was the center of the world in the ancient times. And so, yeah, the people in the city were the most important. But all of the Italians were also thought of themselves as Roman. They were all related. They were all kind of cousins. And they were all Roman. So certainly they all lived in the Roman Empire. So we would have referred to them as Romans. So if Christopher Columbus had lived in ancient times, we would have said that he was a Roman explorer. And he was not, though. He was an Italian explorer sailing for Spain. All right. So then that leads us to this next kind of anchor fact is, well, how do we get from a Roman world to an Italian world, right? Or a European world, we could say, because Italians and Spaniards and so on, those are European people. And so, how do we get from the ancient, or from the European world of Christopher Columbus, since we're working backwards, to the ancient world? What kind of event do we have to cross over in order to finally get into that ancient time? Gabriel, you want to guess, or you remember?
Fall of Rome.
Yeah, very nice. Exactly. We've got to have the ancient world go away and the European world get started up. So that's exactly where we go next. So that's it, the fall of Rome. If you want to zoom in here on this nice image, which is pretty cool. We've never done it in history through art. It's a little bit violent and a little bit weird, but basically this is the painting that I like to use to symbolize the fall of Rome. The fall of Rome didn't happen in a moment, right? What does anybody remember? Well, we haven't studied ancient history yet, and we haven't studied the background very much either, so probably nobody here is going to remember that. But it took about 100 years, actually, for the Roman Empire to fall. And the city of Rome, right here, depicted, was sacked, which means these barbarians here, who are depicted as kind of naked brutes, ran through the city and ruined everything more than once before the Roman Empire was fully destroyed. This is one of those moments where they are sacking the city. And as you can see, they're going to destroy this beautiful statue of one of the Roman emperors. And so that's the symbol that I use. So when we go back to this here, this little mini picture is a representation of that. I like to use paintings to symbolize really important moments as if I can, right? So our anchor fact timeline is going to have these kind of famous looking pictures in it. All right, so very good, Gabriel. In order to go from the European world of Columbus back to the ancient world, yeah, we have to have this milestone, which helps us understand, well, okay, the world of Columbus came 1,000 years. Look at that, over 1,000 years after the ancient world ended. So we still have a long ways to go to get back to us, right? But we could kind of see the link here, that the ancient world ended. Then what happened was there was something called the Dark Ages, and the Europeans had to pretty much start from scratch and build up their countries, such as Spain and England and France and so on, and then eventually send their explorers out into the world, and some of the people who were colonists from those countries declared independence, creating a new country, and that country became the most important in the world, as it is today. See, so we're able to kind of leapfrog through history here from ancient times all the way to us by using these things, which are called anchor facts. Okay, so we're doing pretty well here. We have actually now gotten all the way back to ancient times. At least we've gotten to the end of ancient times. But now, you know, we're going to study ancient history. We've got to have a pretty good sense of, well, how much history is that? Right? Because we can't get into kind of a little part of it and get stuck there. And by the time we're done, you know, it comes Memorial Day 2016 and we're still talking about the 75th Pharaoh of ancient Egypt. We're going to be in big trouble. Right? So we're going to have to get this kind of a big picture understanding of what ancient history is so that we can know how much to pay attention to. And there's already a little bit of a hint here as to how this is going to go. But in order to clearly understand how much further we're going to go into the ancient past, we've got to have a clear understanding of this strange fact that we've been going back in history, and the dates have been getting smaller and smaller. And so we've already got all the way back to 476. So if we continued going back, we would end up at 200 AD, 100 AD. Oh, wait, it's starting to get small. 50 AD, 20. What's going to happen here? We're going to run out of numbers. Oh, no. Okay. We know what happens, right? We do end up kind of at the zero point here. That's not a year. Zero is just like on a ruler. It's just a spot. Okay. And then things kind of flip over. And we start counting up again. Even though we're going backwards, we start counting up. So, all right, we encounter an interesting situation. And our next anchor fact has to do with why we do this. Because ancient history becomes this kind of, is a little bit of a confusing place to study. Because, you know, if you're studying something in ancient history, let's say 2000 BC, or let's compare where we are today, 2015, 2016. Right? Today, if we're studying history and we say something happened in 2016, it hasn't happened yet, right? But we know that it happens after 2015. But if we're studying ancient history, and I tell you that something happened in 2016, and then something happened in 2015, well, which one happened first? Which one happened after? In ancient history. We have to be really, really clear on this. In ancient history, which one happens first? 2016 or 2015? I'm surprised not all the hands are going up here, so I'm glad Rosetta can explain it to us. Go ahead, Rosetta.
2015.
Oh, say that clearly.
When 2015 happened before 2016.
Not in ancient history. All right, so I'm glad we have this confusion, right? Here we go. This is the confusion. 2016 BC happened before 2015 BC. It's the opposite. See, the numbers are getting bigger in this direction. So stuff that happened over here came first. All right? Whereas we're going in this direction, stuff that happened, it's always, on this timeline, the things will always work the same way. What's to the left came first. What's to the right is last. So you can see 2015 on this ruler is 2016 on this ruler would be before 2015. Or 2000 is before 1000. Right? Because it's to the left. All right? So, this is one of the crucial things. If we're going to study ancient history properly, we have to be comfortable with the fact that the bigger numbers come first, not the other way around, because of a very important thing that happened in history, which is going to be one of our anchor facts. Okay, which has to do with why these dates are marked AD and these dates are marked BC. And Patrick already explained that before. What's the AD, Patrick?
Anno Domini.
And the BC is?
Before Christ.
Right, because we have another anchor fact of history here. We have the reason why this calendar works this way. The reason why the ruler is the way that it is. The numbers get bigger in this direction, but the numbers also get bigger in this direction. Well, the way the ruler works has to do with a very important event in history. I'll show you the full version of this. We're going to look at this painting in History Through Art because it's spectacular and beautiful. But I'll give you a little bit of a preview here. Right? So this is a painting that represents the birth of Jesus in history. So we're going to know that going into our history through art. And you can see the baby Jesus here, right? Everybody kind of knows what nativity scenes look like because they're often a part of Christmas celebrations, right? And then over here we have other things going on, which are really fascinating in terms of history. Right, so this painting represents the birth of Jesus, and that's what we're going to have to symbolize that on our timeline here. Okay, and so this is very important because this has to do with the rise of Christianity, which is the most important religion in the world. And of course, I think most people know that here today. So that is another really crucial anchor fact. This is the one anchor fact that explains the calendar. So if you want to understand the ruler that we're using to measure history, this is quite an important thing to know. The ruler works in a certain way. It goes all the way back to zero, and then after that, the numbers get bigger because you're getting further and further away from the moment when Jesus was born. So that's why we call it BC, before Christ. Okay, now you'll notice something curious here, though, that the birth of Jesus is marked in our timeline circa 4 BC. Why is that? The tradition is that Jesus was born in year 1. That's the reason why the calendar works the way that it does. How come Jesus' birth is marked circa 4 BC? Anybody from last year remember? And what does it mean, C period? I already kind of gave it away. I said circa. What does that mean, circa 4 BC? Gabriel, go ahead.
About
or around. Circa is the Latin word that means circle, right? So around 4 BC. That means that historians have made a very, very close study of all of history, right? And they have taken all of the stories concerning Jesus, and they have weighed them against each other and figured out that, well, actually, we don't have very good information about his life. Not good enough to make a real history of his life. So, if we're going to be accurate about what we do and don't know about Jesus, we know that he was born around a certain time. About the best we can do, if we're going to be really honest about it, is, well, around 4 BC. And people got the date wrong because, well, they started making calendars having to do with Jesus in the Dark Ages. And they didn't really know when he was born. They kind of were guessing. They're doing their best, but they couldn't do any better than that. So they got it wrong. Now, even so, we're not sure. So that's why we put the circa. As well as historians can figure things out. And sometimes they can get it right to the very moment that something happened. Because they use all kinds of really advanced techniques for finding things out. But in this case, they can't do it. They can't do any better than that. They can't agree when Jesus was born. So they put circa 4 BC. And that's why also the calendar hasn't changed. If historians had been able to pinpoint right down to the moment, right, or the day, right, exactly what year Jesus was born, then they probably would have changed the calendar. They probably all would have got together and said, hey, we have a calendar based on the birth of Jesus. We better shift it because we got it wrong. So from now on, we better write our dates in a different spot. But they said, all right, we can't really know for sure, so we're not going to change the calendar. So from now on, we have a calendar that works in a certain way. It's a little bit curious that Jesus wasn't really born exactly right there. He was born kind of 4 years before that point, the best we can tell. But so that's why we're going to have this kind of circa 4 BC here as our anchor fact. All right, so now we are in ancient times. Jesus was born in ancient times. And he was born in the Roman Empire, and then the Roman Empire fell in 476, and we get to Europe, and then the Europeans discover America, and then the Americans declare their independence, and hey, we get to where we are. All right, so you see how we can kind of, again, leap through these centuries, and even, as it turns out now, 2,000 years worth of history from past to present, and make sure that we know where we are at any particular point in time. All right, the final question we're going to answer today is, okay, now that we understand our calendar, how far back does this whole thing go? Ancient history, this thing that we're going to study, what? How big is it? How far back, BC, does it go? And again, my veterans from last year probably know this already. We're going to go back to an event that is commemorated with on this particular famous archaeological piece, which is from ancient Egypt. And it's called the Narmer Palette. So does that remind anybody of what moment it is that is our next anchor fact of ancient history. Patrick, go ahead.
Menes in armor.
Does what? There's Menes in armor. What does he do?
Unifies Egypt.
All right. He brought Egypt together. We're going to look at this palette in detail because it's a fascinating kind of work of ancient art. And it shows us the unification of Egypt. And so, yeah, there was a ruler named Menes in ancient sources and myths. And then later on, historians call him Narmer. So that's why I call him Menes Narmer. He's kind of got two different names, and I like to use them both. So I call him Menes Narmer. And then borrowing from this palette here of ancient Egyptian history, what I do is I just kind of zoom in on it a bit. And that becomes, as you can see, the final anchor fact in a sense, because Menes Narmer unifies Egypt circa 3000 BC. That's as far back as we can see in terms of history, circa 3000 BC. Exactly 3000 BC? No. We cannot see far back like that very accurately. We're not completely sure. We have some information. We're not completely satisfied that it's exactly as great as we need it to be to say we know for sure. So we say circa. And if we don't know for sure, we're going to be honest about it. We're going to write circa. Okay, so Egypt was unified circa 3000 BC. This is about as far back as we can see historically, which means that the Egyptians had writing and they wrote about this. They had writing. You guys probably know what kind it was. We'll take a look at it more closely as we study Egyptian history. It's called hieroglyphics. It's a kind of picture writing. Fascinating to study. And so they wrote about the events of Egyptian history, including this one, using hieroglyphics. And that's how we know that this happened, is that they basically have records of it happening. And this is about as far back as those records are good, because before this, if Menes Narmer unified Egypt, what do we know about Egypt before him? He unified it. So, what was it like before? Rosetta?
It wasn't unified.
It wasn't unified, right? Or ununified, or fragmented, or a bunch of separate things. So it was, it was probably quite a mess. Because in ancient times, and as it turns out in modern times too, when human beings live in all kinds of little separate, little kind of enclaves, they don't get along very well with their neighbors. Never have, probably never will, unless they figure out how to do better. And so all these little separate parts of Egypt didn't like each other. And they didn't, when we write that they were unified, what, as we're going to see, it wasn't exactly pleasant. So they didn't get along, they didn't want to be unified, but Menes Narmer did it anyway, and as a result, there was one country of Egypt, and that country had a relatively kind of good environment, stable environment where the people could live and have a life together and defend themselves against people from other areas and so on. And so we have a story that we can follow. We know that human beings have been doing things on Earth a lot longer than 3000 BC. We know that's the case. But we can't include whatever people were doing back then in history, because they didn't have writing and they didn't have records that allow us to figure out exactly when it was they were doing what they were doing. So when we look further back than 3000 BC, we're going into something called prehistory. Prehistory means, well, things that human beings were doing before there were writing and record keeping that allows us to have history. So, yeah, there was probably some pretty fascinating stuff going on back then, but we don't know it well enough. We can't see it clearly enough in order to make history out of it. So we call that prehistory. Okay? But starting about 3000 BC, the Egyptians were keeping records. They were writing stuff down. They were well organized in their society. We'll see what kind of society it was. And from then on, we have a pretty clear picture of what was going on. So this is what we're going to study this year. We're going to study ancient history, which is from 3000 BC to 476 AD. This entire chunk of it here. That's what we're going to be studying. So we now have kind of a basic idea of what we're going to be looking at. We're almost done with our anchor facts here. I mean, in a way, we can now kind of leap back through these anchor facts all the way to the past. That's not too bad. But as it turns out, we're missing something in order to have a good kind of overall picture of history before we start looking at the details. Turns out there's at least one more anchor fact that we need. So we're going to find that one out on Monday and then get into the details here of how to study ancient history itself. Okay. Oh, and I just said something incorrect. Monday is Labor Day. So we have a long weekend coming up. So as it turns out, it's going to be next Tuesday, right? Because tomorrow is History Through Art. And then we have a long weekend. And so we return to our anchor facts on Tuesday. Okay, folks, that'll do it. Last thoughts or questions for today on our anchor facts? All right, well, we've made it back to 3000 BC, so we're pretty close to being ready to get started here. Okay, talk to you tomorrow, everybody. Bye for now.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
Bye.
Bye, Mr. Powell.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.